As we practice and train, particularly meditation, there should be a concerted effort or attention put on how to calm the mind, settle the mind, allow the mind to establish itself in stillness. And, you know, there's a there's a certain degree of effort that is essential in that turning to stillness. But it's also important to recognize that they're trying too hard to make the mind still is tends to be counterproductive. So it's being willing to experiment and get a feel for the the degree to which we need to put forth effort, and then also to letting go. And this is a struggle that we all work with, and we tend to look to formulas, methods, techniques to solve it for us, or we look to teachings, teachers, advice that'll make it clear for us. But it's important not to be just investing huge amounts of effort or belief in the external those external aspects, whether it's a teaching teacher trying to get the teacher to tell you what you need to do, or scouring the text to find the perfect teaching that will tell you what to do, what is the right amount of effort, what's the right thing to do, or to try to find the right technique, the method. If I just follow this particular method assiduously, faithfully, then the method is going to make the mind peaceful. And that's looking to the external. And the opposite is I don't need don't need methods, don't need techniques, don't need teachers, don't need teachings. Don't need anything. I'll just rely on myself. And you know, that tends to be the say the other extreme. And you know, so often this is where, you know, we keep missing the Dhamma. By, you know, either overshooting it or falling short. And the I'm reminded of an image that Ajahn Chah used to talk about that, say that balance or what is just right. See. It's like if in Thailand when you collect mangoes, you've got a bamboo pole and then you've got a little rattan basket. It's only this big, and then it's. You go up and you hook the mangoes and then bring it down this little basket, so because the mangoes are they bruise very easily, so that if they drop or fall, then they get bruised and they're not so nice to eat. So that like I said, that, you know, comparing it to if your stick is too short, then you can't reach the mangoes, and if your stick's too long, then it's really clumsy, and you can't get them and drop the mangoes also. So that they, you know, just having the stick the right length, so that you can collect the mangoes and sort of be able to enjoy the fruit. So similarly in meditation practice, there's that need for being just right, a quality of balance, and not overshooting, overreaching, and not falling short. And that's the in terms of effort and in practice, it's like that, and also in terms of our, you know, how we think about it, how we conceive of the practice, our ideas about practice, because we tend to say overshoot the Dhamma, overextend what is thinking beyond the Dhamma. Or we don't quite reach the Dhamma. We don't quite reach what is true, what is right. Our thinking is either, you know, too high and lofty, over idealizing, over philosophizing. Or it doesn't quite reach the Dhamma. It's sort of, it's too low, too shallow, too much entangled with greed, hatred, and delusion, too much entangled with our own selfishness or self-obsession. So it doesn't reach the Dhamma. And as they say, or we take the Dhamma and make it way too refined, way too lofty, and don't reach it. So there's, you know, just, it's so important to be reflecting, and this is where the importance of allowing the mind to become peaceful, and to put the attention and effort in settling the mind, allowing the mind to become more clear, allowing the heart to be still, rather than sort of, it's like having a wasp nest, and you keep taking a stick and poking at it. But it's always, you get these wasps coming out and stinging you, and or you're running, you tend to spend your time running away from the wasp. And if you leave it alone, they'll settle down. And in a certain way, the mind itself is like that as well. If we just be willing to attend to the breath, attend to the meditation object, and the mind will settle. But we keep sort of poking at it, taking a stick and poking it at the wasp nest of our mind, and stirring it up with excess proliferations and thoughts and worries and anxieties and fears, and sort of put it down, just drop it, let it be. Which isn't just being heedless and negligent. Letting it be with mindfulness, let the mind settle, and because the mind is essentially, in its essence, is clear and still, and this is something that the Buddha himself, the great forest masters keep emphasizing over and over again, that the nature of the mind is pure, is still. Its fundamental nature is pure and still. It's just that what we keep adding to it is less than pure, less than still. So there's the aspects of calming and settling the mind, but also in terms of how we reflect and investigate contributes to how we experience the mind, and that. And this is what the aspects of vipassana. There's a samatha and vipassana are practices which work together. The samatha practices are the practices which are conducive to tranquility and stilling and one-pointedness, and the practices of vipassana are more around the insight reflective tendencies, characteristics. And they have to function together. And there isn't, say, there isn't anywhere in the discourses where the Buddha, say, talks about vipassana on its own. It's always the two, these two aspects, samatha and vipassana, as being the ways of approaching practice and approaching the mind. And vipassana is really, say, in terms of its literal translation of seeing clearly, or seeing through things, seeing things in their true nature. And again, this is, I think, this aspect of holding things in accordance with Dhamma is the theme that has to be carried through, whether we're trying to calm the mind or whether we're trying to use the investigative or reflective capacities of the mind. That are we reflecting, investigating in accordance with Dhamma, or are we missing the Dhamma? Are we sort of overshooting the Dhamma, or are we falling short? And that itself is a really fruitful investigation. But the, say, the ways that traditionally are delineated for the themes for vipassana are really the say, reminders to us that allow us to bring the mind, bring the heart in a line with Dhamma, and to reflect on impermanence. To take impermanence as a theme. When the mind is moving, reflecting, thinking, considering, to be bringing up and setting the boundaries of the thought processes so that they're established within that sphere of impermanence, uncertainty, change. And if we can maintain that and sustain the attention on the that which is changing and recognizing it as change, impermanence, seeing its arising, being attentive to its ceasing as a impermanent, changing phenomena, then there's the mind will settle as well. It'll start to let go. Start to, just by seeing, and that is that it's just the nature of things. You know, recognizing that when something, or when everything has its the nature, the tendency to be uncertain, to be shifting, changing, and be in a constant state of arising and ceasing, then we can not be so either worried, because we tend to be, we don't, on a sort of visceral level, we don't like things to change. We would like things to be stable, steady, unchanging, constant, so that it will be a source of security for us. We seek security and our sense of being sure and certain of things by trying to hold back that process of change. And of course it's futile. But as we see that more clearly and really allow our attention to encompass and envelop that the arising and ceasing of both our thoughts, our feelings, our impressions, material things, the world external, the world internal, and there's a sense of again, the mind will settle and come to stillness because we recognize, oh, that's just the way Dhamma is. That's the way things are in nature. So that seeing things clearly allows the heart to be not be reacting blindly. It can there's a certain confidence in it, in the stillness within the heart. It doesn't have to move out and try to control anything or try to feel threatened by anything. Things are just as they are. They are impermanent. They are changing. So that aspect of vipassana is just resting in resting in Dhamma. That's where the sense of being, say, being that balance of being in balance, being in harmony with Dhamma. Similarly, the Buddha used the anicca dukkha anatta as the basis of seeing things as they are, vipassana practice, insight, so that the seeing and reflecting on experience in terms of dukkha, that quality of unsatisfactoriness, of stress, of suffering, of dis-ease, and it's translated in so many different ways. But, you know, fundamentally to be recognizing that the basic discomfort of the human condition, and you know, whether it's external in terms of contact with the world around us, or whether it's internal, the nature of the movement of mind itself. There's that fundamental inability of experience to actually to really satisfy, to really be a a source of complete well-being. It's because it changes, because it is uncertain. And you know, just in this fundamentally that where you know any experience is never going to be able to fully satisfy. You know, we are always looking for something that we find pleasant, comfortable, exciting or gratifying, but it doesn't satisfy. You know, in the same way that, and it doesn't mean that things aren't pleasant, but even the pleasant isn't satisfactory. And it's in the same way that again, if it has to be experienced with Dhamma as the basis. And if it's like when we're it's just like eating something that's really delicious, and you know, the actual sensation is pleasurable and it's conducive to happiness, delighting. And if it's experienced with Dhamma as the foundation of the experience, then say we know when to stop. We know what is enough. If we don't experience it with Dhamma, then either we eat too much, and then it doesn't feel good, and it's something. You know, having too much of what we find pleasurable, and we've all experienced that. Or we have something that is that we really like, tastes good, it's delicious, and then it's not enough. The delight in the taste is there, but then for some reason either it's just not enough. And then the mind starts thinking about it and obsessing about it and wanting to have more, and how can I get more? Or feeling sad because missed my shot to be able to get more and had it. It's not in accordance with Dhamma. Underreaches. And or overextends, and doesn't sort of hit the Dhamma. But when we recognize that inherently there is this dukkha, then it's the way we experience that is knowing what is the balance, what's useful, what's appropriate, what's skillful, a response that is going to sustain and maintain states of well-being and equanimity, clarity. So that even within experience of something that is seeing it as dukkha, and experiencing it in with the Dhamma as the foundation, being balanced with Dhamma, then the quality of the heart is the purity of inherent purity within the heart is not, we're not separated from that. The inherent stillness within the heart, we're not separated from that because we're in accord with Dhamma. But its experience is dukkha. So reflecting, you know, dukkha doesn't have to make us unhappy. But it prods us to reflect and investigate and consider how do we maintain in being the experience of Dhamma and being in accord with Dhamma. So that's having a point of reflection is the tool, impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and not self, by using these tools, and it's giving us the opportunity to be in accord with Dhamma. Of course, that's what vipassana is for. Giving us the tools to enter and abide in Dhamma. So that they say that there's reflections on and investigations on anatta, seeing as not self, really taking our experience of body, can we make the body not feel discomfort? Can we make the body not feel pain? Can we make the body not feel sickness, not get a headache, not get a stomach ache? And he goes, no, you can't do that. Or did it ask you first? Stomach is upset, knees hurting. Does it sort of ask you ahead of time? So seeing it as not self, it's a body that has built up according to four elements, has its own conditions, birth, maturing, it's in the process of continuing along, getting sick, eventually it'll die according to its own conditions. It's not consulting with us at any time. Yeah, the mind itself. And sometimes we're meditating or not even necessarily meditating, just things. Stuff comes up in the mind, memories from who knows when, old memories. Does it ever consult us or ask permission to bring that up? It just comes up. Some of the projections into the future. And if we believe it as to be self, then we get either caught in the confidence that, oh, that's exactly what it is. This is what it's going to be like. That's going to be, the future is going to be like this. I've got it all figured out. Everything is fine. Now I know what the future is going to be like. Or we get worried, anxious, proliferating about with all sorts of plans of what one's going to do, whether it's, you know, the next moment or the next day or the next week or the next year. But there's projections into the future. And it's, but it's, you know, it's just the mind projecting. And not, so like seeing it, this is not self. It is just a thinking process. Just thoughts arising with an object that is directed to the future. So that stepping back from body and mind, identification with body and mind, identification that that's who I really am. And it doesn't mean that one doesn't have a body or doesn't have thoughts, but it's like seeing it in its proper way, in accordance with Dhamma, that it's the sense of not being self, not being what one's fundamental true nature, and it's going to be like that all the time. So reflecting that, reminding ourselves of that, recognizing when the mind starts to create attachments and projections, and reminding ourselves that that's not self, and that's not self, and that's not self, and just keep tossing it out, letting it go, letting it drop. Not hanging on and identifying. And so that's, in terms of practice, the ways of allowing the mind to, say, experience clarity, purity, stillness. You know, there's these practices of samatha practices, which are working with the breath, working with a meditation object, and then there's the vipassana aspect, which is around reflections and investigations, how to use the mental processes, seeing them in their true nature, so that one can experience the peace of the mind that is not obsessing. As I said before, I mean, it's important not to take a technique and invest all your hopes that the technique is going to do it. The idea that the technique or the method is the Dhamma. Is as fraught with impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and not self as anything else. So it's important to be bringing that attention inwards, and really being attentive to what, you know, what do we, what are we holding on to, and how do we let that go? How do we let a thought go? How do we let a particular hope or fear? Now, how do we experience it as a thought or a feeling, and then just let it go? And that is, you know, if you come with some theory or some technique that you've heard about, you know, there's a certain validity that you can at least have it as a working hypothesis. But that isn't what's going to do it. You have to be willing to turn attention to the experience in the present moment of this body, this mind, and bring awareness and attention and investigation. I mean, just these qualities of mindfulness, of just being able to hold an object in awareness, of say sampajanya, of clear comprehension, having an awareness that is broad enough to experience something completely, to have a quality of wisdom, which is wisdom is always, from the Buddhist perspective, is always that quality which sees things clearly but is letting go. Quality of loving kindness, so that the letting go isn't just a dismissing, an annihilation, but is a quality of there's a sense of care, of warmth, quality of patience. So that's where the each moment is informed by these different qualities, which are in accordance with Dhamma. Mindfulness is in accordance with Dhamma. Clear comprehension, wisdom, patience, loving kindness, compassion. These are all sort of, but they're not on their own, they're not the Dhamma either. But they're, qualities which, when they're in balance and functioning together, working together, they're what allow the heart, the mind to experience Dhamma. Allow the Dhamma to sort of shine forth within the heart. So that to take the instruction, take the techniques, take the teachings, but drawing them inwards and bringing it to a place of experience, and being willing to experiment, to be attentive to how does it work, how does it work for me? Not was it, how do I try to force myself into the mold of what the teaching says I think I should do or should be. But how does it work for me? So that the heart actually experiences a freedom from discontent, dissatisfaction, dis-ease, and is peaceful and clear. And that's the sort of the indication of as we approach the Dhamma, then the heart becomes more still, more clear, more pure. So just to take these teachings and work with it. But it's when we work with it, then it sort of it become, you know, so we make it our ours in terms of it's, you know, we have to be taking responsibility for our practice, our insight, our relinquishment. I'll offer that for reflection this evening.